There are growing calls to get rid of caucuses after the chaos with the Democratic caucus in Iowa last month. Our guest says this is just one example of one of a handful of big risks to elections in America: incompetence. In a new book, he shares a series of challenges facing American elections and some ways to solve them. Richard Hassan is a professor of law and political science at the University of California, Irvine. His new book is Election Meltdown: Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. Rick, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be with you.
Before we dig into the challenges you lay out in the book, big picture, it seems like this all has you worried about the future of our election system in the United States. How worried are you?
Well, I should say that the main focus of election meltdown is not how strong our election system is by itself, but how much confidence do people have in the strength of our election system. That is, you know, we really need to worry about what the public thinks, because a democracy depends on holding a fair election and the losers agreeing that the result that is announced was a fair one and that they'll fight to the next time. And so there's all kinds of stresses now on our system. And according to recent polling by both NPR and the Associated Press, large numbers of people are concerned that their votes are not going to be safely and securely counted. So I'm very worried about this as we go into 2020.
Well, let's look into some of the things that might erode that confidence as you lay out in your book. And let's start with that point of incompetence in election management. Where do you see this happening?
So, you know, I would say by and large, our election officials do a pretty good job, often faced with severe budget constraints. It's not so sexy to fund election administration like getting a, you know, a new fire truck or something like that. But there are problems of incompetence in pockets around the country. Back in 2012, I wrote a book called The Voting Wars, and it opened with, I don't know if you remember this incident with Kathy Nicholas, who was the election administrator in Waukesha, who left about 15,000 votes out of her totals, and it flipped a state Supreme Court race from one candidate to another. We have these pockets of incompetence that occur throughout the country. Sometimes it happens with Democrats, sometimes with Republicans. But when there's a very close election, we don't focus on the 95% of the places where things went perfectly or close enough to perfectly. We focus on those places where there are problems. And there are enough places like that. And I just use examples from 2016 and 2018 in the book Election Meltdown to show that in a very close election, that those pockets of incompetence really can undermine the public's trust in the process.
Let's talk about solutions. It seems like one possible problem is that in many cases, you have a county clerk who runs as a Democrat or a Republican, or a secretary of state in states that aren't Wisconsin who's in charge of the process that are Democrats and Republicans. Does that create a perception or risk that people are going to see this as a partisan decision, whatever they do?
Well, I think that's part of it. But it's also, you know, when they're running an election, you know, let's take Broward County, Florida, where there were, you know, serious problems with Brenda Snipes, who election after election, major problems. In one election, she left out of sending absentee ballots to about 58,000 people. In another election, she left a medical marijuana initiative off the ballot. In 2018, which is the race I focus on, she couldn't get a recount completed in time. They actually got the numbers done. This was a U.S. Senate race between Bill Nelson and Rick Scott. And they didn't submit their vote totals. They missed by 2 minutes because her employee didn't know how to work the website to submit the vote totals. She was more than once reelected to office because it's a heavily Democratic town. There's not really partisan competition. A Republican's not going to win there, and nobody primaried her. And so I think that's not the exact problem you're talking about,
sure,
but that is a problem we need to think about, which is that you know, the reason to have a partisan election is supposedly to ensure assure accountability. But that doesn't always happen in a place that's dominated by one party.
How do we make sure we have competent election management everywhere we need it, county level, state level?
Well, so, you know, one of the challenges is that election administration in the United States is highly decentralized, right? Rather than holding one election in November, we're going to hold something like 8,000 or 9,000 elections. Lots of power to the states, lots and lots of power to the county or sub-county level where they hold elections. Ideally, I'd like to see a national system for our national elections. But in the short term, what we need are state secretaries of state or state election boards, whoever's in charge of the state, to impose competency standards and to point out and grade those election officials who continue to have problems. And voters need to pay attention, too. It's our responsibility to make sure that our election officials are not the ones who are messing up. And if they are, we need to demand change.
Talking to Rick Hassan, his new book is Election Meltdown, Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. Another category you look at is voter suppression efforts, claims of widespread fraud in voting. You say, I use the word claims, you say most of these fraudulent claims, almost all of them, there's really not much to them.
Right. So, you know, back in, again, in 2012, when I was writing about this issue, I thought it was kind of open. You know, how much evidence were we going to have? And now, by 2020, I think it's pretty clear that almost all of the claims of massive voter fraud that are made with no or virtually no evidence. And I the book actually opens with a trial in Kansas over a very strict Kansas law that said if you want to register to vote, you have to provide documentary proof of citizenship, like your birth certificate or your naturalization certificate. And Kris Kobach, who was the Secretary of State of Kansas, one of these people notorious for claiming without evidence that voter fraud's a massive problem, he had to prove at this trial called Fish versus Kobach that non-citizen voting was a major problem which would justify this law. And he was able to put on whatever experts he wanted. And in the end of the day, while Kobach had claimed that what he had offered as evidence was the tip of the iceberg, the judge, a Republican-appointed fourth-generation Kansan, said there was no iceberg. There was just an icicle made up mostly of administrative error. And so how is it that this undermines voter confidence? Well, I think, and this came out in the AP NORC poll that was released today, large numbers of Republicans believe, because they hear these laws being passed in the name of preventing voter fraud, that voter fraud is a major problem in this country. And Democrats turn around looking at the evidence that voter fraud is not really the basis for this and think this must be a way of trying to shrink the electorate. And they believe that Republicans are trying to manipulate the election results. And so this fight over voter fraud and voter suppression leads both sides to believe the other side is cheating and undermines everyone's confidence in the process.
That that opinion or that statement about the lack of voter fraud has made you unwelcome among some Republicans. You also, though, claim that worries about the impact of voter suppression have been overstated by Democrats. Why is that?
Well, so, you know, let's take Wisconsin, for example. Hillary Clinton said that essentially that she lost Wisconsin in 2016 because of the state's voter ID law. And she cited to a very questionable study done by a Democratic outfit that said that 200,000 votes were depressed by the state's voter ID law. And lots of times these claims are being made without any good evidence. There was a subsequent study done by Ken Mayer of the University of Wisconsin that found a much smaller effect. It could have had an outcome, a determinative effect. But lots of times Democrats are exaggerating the effect of these laws. And I think what it ends up doing is getting into a battle over the social science evidence. Is there enough evidence to prove that an election would have flipped because of a voter ID law or not? And I think that's really the wrong question. The question is, why should the state get to deny an otherwise eligible voter the right to vote? Why put stumbling blocks if it's not justified by an important government interest like preventing voter fraud or promoting voter confidence? And since we know from the studies that these laws do not have that effect, I think that would be a better basis on which to discuss these things than for Democrats, as they sometimes do, to exaggerate the effects of these laws. I should say sometimes these laws do have big effects. That law in Kansas that I mentioned, that Show Me Your Papers law, we know that 30,000 people had their voter registrations put on hold because of this law and would not have been able to register or vote had a federal court not intervened. So some of these laws really do have a suppressive effect. Other laws don't have such a suppressive effect, in part because in response to them, Democrats mobilize, they get more people registered to vote, and they do they get more people voter identifications and take other steps to try to militate against the these new restrictive laws.
We're talking to Richard Hassan from the University of California, Irvine. His new book is Election Meltdown, Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there changes you'd like to see in our election system? Do you feel a distrust that the outcome doesn't really reflect the votes that happened? What would make you feel more confident about the outcome of our elections? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Richard Hasson about his new book, Election Meltdown, Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have concerns about voting and elections in the United States? Do you lack confidence in the outcome? What changes, if any, would you like to see? Do you have questions for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to a caller now. Marty is with us in Lake Geneva. Marty, hi.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. It's my understanding that the percentage of voter fraud in Wisconsin back in 2016 was 0.0034. This roughly amounted to 219 instances of potential voting fraud, and as it turns out, that it was maybe 100 or so of those voters that went to the wrong polling place. And yet, Wisconsin passes a law for voter ID because it's such a rampant, disgrace in Wisconsin. And that is why I just... We know that the Republicans...
Marty, I got you. Rick, Marty, worried that the response disproportionate to the cause.
Well, I'd say it's not only disproportionate. If you look at the kind of election fraud that occurs, almost none of it is prevented by having a voter ID law. If you wanted to steal an election by stealing someone's identity, you'd have to go to the polling place, hope that the person you're impersonating, who's dead or moved or something, that someone at the polling place worker doesn't recognize that name and know that you're an imposter. You'd have to do this on a large enough scale, pay people to go into the polling place to try to vote for someone else. You can't verify how they're voting because they're in a voting booth or even if they've voted at all. That's why we see virtually no instances of an organized effort to try to steal elections in this way. So while voter ID laws tend to be very popular – and they're often promoted in the name of preventing voter fraud, the kind of voter fraud we see, which typically occurs with the tampering with absentee ballots, for example, that has nothing to do with whether or not there's a voter ID law. So it's not just disproportionate, it's aimed at the wrong target.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, Rick, I want to get into some more of the concerns you raise in your book. Another one is inflammatory rhetoric about stolen elections. Talk about what you see and how that could erode confidence.
Sure. Well, we had this unprecedented situation of Donald Trump claiming as the victor that 3 to 5 million fraudulent votes were cast in his election, all for his opponent, he told ABC's David Muir. About the same number, the 3 million number, as he lost the popular vote by. So this seemed to be a way for him to try to explain away why he had lost. There was absolutely no evidence of millions of non-citizen voters. The number of cases of non-citizen voting in the United States is very, very small, and I go through the evidence of that in Election Meltdown. But it's not just Trump making claims of stolen or rigged elections, claims which cause people to on that side to believe that the elections are capable of being stolen, that these elections are capable of being manipulated. I talk about the example of Stacey Abrams, who was running for governor of Georgia against Brian Kemp, who was the then Secretary of State. Kemp did some pretty terrible things in terms of trying to suppress the vote in Georgia, and I talk about it. But as with the Hillary Clinton case I described earlier, there was no good evidence that what he did actually swung the election. And so when you had someone like Sherrod Brown claiming that Stacey Abrams' election was stolen, or when you have Abrams herself refusing to accept Brian Kemp as the legitimate governor of Georgia, I think it undermines people's confidence. People might think, why should I even bother voting if the system is rigged? Why should I accept election results if I believe that there's cheating going on all the time? And so I think it's really dangerous when you hear politicians making claims of unsubstantiated claims of stolen elections, even if there are grounds to claim that there were certain unfairnesses in that election.
What's the solution to that, except for, I guess, hoping our political leaders behave in a mature fashion?
Well, what I basically say in my concluding chapter is that in dealing with the rhetoric problem, the best way to do it is to have really transparent, strong election procedures. The more competent election officials are, The more we're dealing with the actual evidence of what went on in a race, the clearer it is that votes have been fairly and accurately counted, the less oxygen these claims can get. And so, sure, there'll be some followers of a political leader who'll believe anything that the politician says. But for those in the middle, for those who might say, well, is there anything to this story? If the more you can point to a clean and fairly run election system, the better off you're going to be inoculated against this kind of incendiary rhetoric.
Let's bring on another caller now. Karina is with us in South Milwaukee. Karina, hi.
Hi. I completely agree with the previous caller as far as, you know, accurate voting. I heard earlier today that, you know, in Australia that they actually charge people if they do not vote. And on the one hand, I thought, oh, that's wonderful because it's going to make people vote. But then on the other hand, if they're voting without, you know, knowledge of the candidates, knowledge of the policies, then it's kind of like a blind vote.
Karina, thanks a lot for the call. Mandatory voting not on the table right now in the United States, Rick, but in terms of getting more voter participation, do you think some of these problems, if fixing them, the solutions you provide might motivate people to be more likely to vote?
Well, you know, for a long time, I've supported universal voter registration conducted by the federal government and a national voter ID card. It's something that has united Democrats and Republicans. They all dislike the idea. Democrats don't like the ID portion and Republicans don't like the universal aspect. But I think we spent so much time dealing with voter registration. If the federal government gave you a unique voter identification number when you turned 18 or when you became a U.S. citizen and that followed you around your entire life and you didn't have to worry about coming up with the documents to provide the, to get the ID, the government would do that for you. I think we'd have a much more rational system. We wouldn't need to require people to vote, but it would just be very easy wherever you lived to be able to cast your ballot in federal elections. And I think that, that's not something that's going to be fixable by November. That's not one of my short-term solutions. But looking down the line, I would love to see a system like that.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Rick Hassan, author of the new book, Election Meltdown, Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. Let's get into that dirty trick a bit and misinformation campaigns, another portion of your book. How are those eroding confidence in our voting?
Well, you know, you don't have to go, we can go back just a couple of weeks to the Iowa caucus meltdown. Very fortunate for my book publisher that my book came out the day that the Iowa caucus melted down. One of the things we saw was that immediately you had the president's campaign manager and children claiming that the election was rigged in order to help defeat Bernie Sanders. No evidence of this whatsoever. But you also had, you may remember there was this smartphone app that didn't work. So there was a backup phone number that precinct captains were supposed to call to report their election results to the Iowa Democratic Party. Well, over on the website 4chan, the phone number was produced, and the phone lines were jammed with supporters of President Trump trying to stop the Democrats from being able to participate in giving the vote totals. So you know, these kinds of dirty tricks have been around for a while, but now, with the rise of social media, things can spread very quickly through technology. It's not just the Russians engaging in a misinformation effort in 2016, but I think all of it really undermines people's confidence. It's not as though we're necessarily going to be taken in by all the misinformation that's floating out there. It's that we're going to start believing that everything that we see or read or hear is false, and that makes it hard to be a good citizen and a good voter when you don't know what information you can trust as you make your decisions.
You also lay out in your book a nightmare scenario, say Russian hackers who we know could shut down power plants in Ukraine, say they did it, you write, in a city like Detroit or Milwaukee on Election Day. What could be the impact? How could we prepare for kind of a, I guess, a black swan election event like that?
Sure. Well, there's nothing we can do as average citizens to make sure that our electrical grid is secure from cyber attack. But we can insist that our election officials have a plan B in place. We don't have good rules in place in most states and certainly don't have anything from Congress to say what would happen if a presidential election were disrupted just in one place, you know, Maybe that's Milwaukee. And certainly, you know, in a state as close as Wisconsin, if voters in Milwaukee couldn't get to the polls because the lights were out, that would, you know, certainly tip the election in one direction. We need to have a plan B. Every state needs to have a plan B. And, you know, I said that in my book, and that was before coronavirus. What if coronavirus shuts down polling places? We need to think proactively about what we need to do in the event of either a terrorist attack or a natural disaster that affects our elections in November.
In our last minute or so, the concerns you raise in your book, Rick, do you see people taking these concerns seriously enough to ensure an orderly transition, whatever the outcome of the next election might be?
Well, the best hope is that the election's not close, because then that makes it easier for there to be a transition. But I am very concerned. And what I hope will happen is over the next few months, we will think about all the areas, whether it's in tech, in law, in politics, in media, where there can be improvements in how we do things to try to minimize the chances that the losers don't accept the election results in 2020, knowing that no matter what happens, 47-48% of the population is not going to be happy with what the result is.
Richard, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure.
That's Richard Hasson, professor of law and public policy at the University of California, Irvine. He was with us today to talk about his new book. It's called Election Meltdown: Dirty Tricks, Distrust, and the Threat to American Democracy. Still time to share your thoughts. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.